and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, of which I have an email right here that I will read in a little while in reference to some jokes we made yesterday. Good morning to you lurking conservatives and, of course, to you broken puppets and angry puppets who need to cut your strings and run. I know a lot of you aren't working today, so have a nice day off, but it is a time. It is a day, Mark Riley. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man, but I'm not doing as good as you because I saw you hit that thing this morning while you were looking at me dead in the face.
Which one?
The instant replay? You didn't even have to look down at it this morning.
I know. Bang! There it was. I was on it. And it's, you know, first of all, it is Veterans Day, and I would like to reach out to the veterans of this country around the world who are fans of our station or not even fans who have something to say, a story to tell. You know, I believe that we should support the troops by bringing them home as soon as possible. I think there is a misunderstanding about some of us progressives and liberals in relation to how we feel about the troops. We're certainly in support of those guys and women as individuals and in the situation they're in. We would like to see them brought home as soon as possible. Today is their day. If you would like to call us here at 866-303-2270 and share some stories with us, we certainly welcome that because we know it is not difficult. And I'll tell you, Riley, looking at some of these facts and looking at the truth about what's going on in Iraq, and not only that, but what's going on with this administration in terms of how it initially intended and has said it would treat veterans either in the field or coming home, and just the hypocrisies and lies that have come out of this administration around that treatment.
Well, look, it's never too early. It's early Friday morning on the East Coast, but for George W. Bush, it is never too early to pimp the sacrifice of America's servicemen and servicewomen. He is going to use Veterans Day today to try and do what? Rehabilitate his image, not the image of veterans, not coming up with any bold new initiatives that might be able to help folks who have served their country honorably and are looking for some kind of help, whether they be homeless or mentally disturbed or whatever. No, George W. Bush is going to use this day to try and do a little image rehab,
to exploit what the veterans are going through on a day to day basis. Now you got to remember, this is a president that has never attended a funeral for a soldier killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is a president that before he was reelected, it was reported that Bush planned to cut nearly $1 billion from veterans program in his second term. At least 200,000 veterans are on waiting lists for health care as we speak. The Bush administration has cut benefits for middle-income veterans, proposed doubling the cost of veterans' prescription drugs, and did not increase VA spending at a rate comparable to the increase in health care costs. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Just the tip of the iceberg.
When you start to talk about homelessness among veterans in this country, the numbers are frightening. On any given night in the United States of America, there are nearly 200,000 veterans homeless somewhere in the street, and more than 500,000 have experienced homelessness over the course of a year. Conservatively, one out of every three homeless males who is sleeping in a doorway, alley, or box in our cities and rural communities has put on a uniform and served our country. And I'm taking this directly from the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. And these are veterans from so many different wars. I mean, it is baffling to me the kind of troubles that these guys come back with in their minds or physically that compromise them to the point where they can't, you know, get a life together again.
You know what's really troubling about this, Mark,
what?
Is that you have some of the larger veterans organizations, the VFW and the American Legion, mm-hmm. which I know about from personal firsthand experience. These are generally the guys who are my country, right or wrong. Even the VFW, even the American Legion is coming up with some of the same numbers that you're reading now about how veterans are being shortchanged by the very government that they've sworn to uphold and protect.
I was reading Bob Herbert's piece in the Times yesterday, and it was some profound insight into what's going on over there. And in the piece, he had some support from a friend of the show, friend of the network, Paul Rykoff of Operation Truth, the Iraqi war vet, who now is a very vocal spokesperson, runs an organization to support veterans issues. Herbert was pointing out in this piece that What's happening to the troops over there in Iraq? Is that they're breaking down in a multitude of ways. You're having issues with the difference between the grunts on the ground who have to do three or four tours of duty compared to the guys that go in with a college education or from West Point to do one tour of duty. There's a schism there. Recruitment is down to the point where recruiters are going into the poorest of areas, which they always have, and basically, coercing, kids, psychologically coercing them, out of their neighborhoods, because for a lot of the kids that are recruited, it could be jail or the army. What are you going to do?
Well, in a lot of instances, Mark, what we're seeing are, and we've documented this, by the way, in talking to various people that have been directly involved, we have seen, in some cases, unethical, in some cases, borderline illegal tactics used to get people to go into service. Remember, we had some people up here who were talking about how they were saying, well, you can cover, a failing drugs test. You can cover various other problems that you may have that might bar you from going into the military.
Mm-hmm.
People are cutting corners. And remember, one of the things that we haven't talked about is that $15,000 bonus that people were supposed to get for re-ing up for 6 years. You remember that?
Yeah, and
then next thing you know, they pulled it out of nowhere. See, this is the kind of thing that when people go to try and recruit kids, they say, wait a minute, I'm not doing it. I'm not going over to Iraq and get shot. Or even people, and I want to be very, very clear about this, there are people who are more than willing to go over and do their time in Iraq, whatever that is, 12 months, 18 months, one tour of duty. Their problem comes when they start hearing about their cousins or their brothers or other people in their families who did one tour of duty and suddenly found out they had to stay longer.
And that this is a war that has not been justified in any way to these soldiers. I think every one of them began in earnest and believed that they were fighting, not necessarily for the right reason or for whatever reason, it didn't really make a difference.
They had a job to do.
Yes,
that's
you
what
make
they
a
tell
commitment,
you.
Exactly, and you go in and do your job. But right now, given that it's a guerrilla situation where there is no tactics that they can define, on the ground, as opposed, in relation to the enemy coming from anywhere at any time in any form, almost impossible to protect yourself. And now you have disintegrating morale, you have depression, you have despair, you have problems, at home. A lot of these guys, if you're doing 3 to 4 tours of duty, who the hell knows what's going on at home? You got a single parent at home who's taking care of your family, and the relationship starts to break down. That starts to wear down these guys. I mean, the kind of problems that they are encountering because this administration, because Donald Rumsfeld, because George Bush decided to go in with the minimal amount of troops necessary to manage. I mean, if they had listened to General Shinseki and done the 300,000 thing, there might have been a chance that this thing could have been over quickly. But, the bottom line is, let's go back even further. We are in this war based on lies, based on manufactured intelligence. And what you were saying before the show, Riley, that Bush is going to go out there and start saying things like, hey, look, plenty of Democrats believe the same intelligence I did.
Yep.
No, they believed you. You were the president giving them the information that they were supposed to, be basing their decisions on, and that information was manufactured and twisted by the White House Iraq group right in the house that you live in, by your own vice president. So that sort of argument, if that starts to come out of his mouth, that he's trying to align himself with Democrats who made the same decision he did, you can't let that bastard off the hook, because the bottom line is that he's a liar, and that type of politicking is it's almost criminal, because what it does is it does that thing where he plays on this idea that, like, hey, I was a victim too in this. You can't let this president squirm out like that, because we know that Cheney's running the country, and we know that right now the approval rating for this president is hovering around 35 to 37, around 36. We know that the approval rating of Dick Cheney is 19, so given that he's running the country, let's do the Marin's math again. I give this administration a 28% approval rating. There's no reason to believe anything ever more that comes out of their mouths.
Well, it's interesting to me, and troubling, I think, to most people who think about it, the position that this administration has put the average foot soldier in terms of his service or her service and duty in Iraq. How do you, for example, exact retribution against a suicide bomber,
mm-hmm.
or against an improvised explosive device that's left on the side of the road? What do you do? Shoot it?
Yeah.
The person's
exactly.
dead. Okay.
Right.
And one of the things I think that Bob Herbert's piece brings out is the fact that America, they really don't have anybody to fight.
Right.
Who do they fight here?
Right.
If somebody blows up one of their friends and it's a roadside bomb, who do they go to justice? Where is everybody?
Well, and then you get into some of those problems that you saw in Vietnam, being that the enemy is elusive and that they're roadside bombs, is that the type of anger that builds up is going to be taken out on the civilian population
exactly.
because there's nowhere else to put it. We got a couple of calls here on the line. I'd ask you to just hold on for a few more minutes. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. If you're a vet, 866-303-2270, and you have something on you want to get off your chest, or you want to express or share a story, this is your day, and we're leaving the phone lines open to you all day, 16 past, Mornings Edition, Air America Radio.
Join the Mornings Edition.
Right now?
Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Twenty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Morning.
It's morning sedition that we're talking to vets this morning. It is Veterans Day. We're gonna keep a mix going though later in the show. Do a comedy. We're gonna do our regular stuff. We got Ann Rice coming in the studio. Ann Rice, who is now very publicly very Catholic.
Yeah.
After years of writing about vampires, though thematically not so different than Catholicism. Kirby in Rockford, Illinois. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Kirby.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, I've been a disabled veteran for 31 years now, and I've noticed that the care of the VA has changed considerably as budget cuts have come into effect.
Oh, really? Like in terms of how have you experienced that?
They're not as free with. I mean, they've been cutting on. I'm sorry, they're making cuts to cheapen their operating expenses.
Right.
And I've noticed that many veterans, well, mostly in the news, I myself have been very well taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed that a lot of younger vets, you know, have mm-hmm. been having problems getting into the VA.
Yeah. Now, do you guys do you meet with any vets groups, or have you talked to any of the younger guys about your experience and their experience?
Well, I belong to a couple of groups,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really. Rockford's a small town,
sure,
comparatively, and I don't see too many of them from around here.
Right. Well, I'm glad they've treated you well, and thanks for your call, Kirby.
Thanks, Kirby.
We got someone in Satya calling from North Carolina. Good morning, Satya.
I'm from Camp Lejeune. I'm a Marine Corps wife.
Mm-hmm.
Morning.
Morning. I just want to say I appreciate your show so much.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
Being in this town, I mean, literally, there's about 10% liberal, 90%. You know, the Marines, they support their commander-in-chief, well, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it is declining big time.
Really? Like how? Like, what are you experiencing? Gossip, chatter?
Oh, like just, you know, like a old man who's lived in North Carolina his whole life, who's been a Republican his whole life, mm-hmm. has told me at a gas station, I will never vote Republican again.
Wow.
You know, and a year ago, there were W stickers everywhere, even after the election.
Uh-huh.
They were everywhere, all over everybody's cars, everywhere you could see. And now I don't see them anywhere. Maybe one in 10 cars, not even that has it.
That's interesting. Now, what about on the base? Is there any, is anybody talking that way on the base?
Well, sure, yeah, but they can't, you know, because
right.
their commanders won't allow them to,
mm-hmm.
you know. They have to keep quiet about that because it's disrespecting their boss.
Right.
Now, Satya, let me ask you very specifically. Are the people that you're talking to that are having these problems with the administration, are they seeing anything in the Democrats that's giving them hope or would lead them to say, well, I'm going to support certain Democratic ideas, Democratic Party ideas, that is?
No. No, not really. They're just
somehow I knew the answer to that question.
Yeah. No, they just are so disgusted with what's happened. I mean, everybody here knows now that the war was a lie.
Wow.
Everybody knows that now.
Yeah.
Some of them are too ashamed to admit it, but they know it, you know.
Oh, that's interesting.
And this is my last year in college, and I've kept my mouth shut, like, the entire time because I've been personally attacked in class for stating my liberal views.
Uh-oh.
Personally attacked. Yeah, I've had a Marine get in my face, like, ready to hit me because I was saying my views. And I wasn't even saying anything that harsh at all, you know. But,
Now, where was your husband during this altercation?
He was at home. If he was there, he would have ripped his throat out.
Uh-oh. Then we'd have had a court-martial to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, good thing he wasn't there. But, yeah, my husband is going to Iraq. And so I got up at 4 o'clock this morning because I can't sleep. I'm stressed. I'm so worried about him going.
You know, I can imagine.
He wants to go because he wants to make the extra money to support us.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he wants to go.
Has he been there before?
To Camp Lejeune?
No, has he been to Iraq before? Is this his first tour over
this
there?
This is his first tour, luckily, because he was teaching. He was teaching all the 17, 18-year-olds how to go to Iraq for the past 3 years. He was teaching them.
Is he a non-com?
Excuse me?
Is he a non-com or is he a commissioned officer?
He's non-com.
Oh, he's non-com. Okay.
So that means...
He's a sergeant. He was an instructor, so he was teaching all the guys at a boot camp how to do combat.
Right.
And then they went straight to Iraq.
Well, Satya, it was great talking to you. You gave us some information that I find encouraging, and also I didn't know, so I really appreciate you calling.
Thank you. I just want to mention,
yeah,
the only reason I got XM Radio was for you and Al Franken.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, we're going to be, we're hanging around for a little while longer.
You are?
I hope so. I mean for a few weeks anyways.
For a few weeks? Okay.
Well, but so it'll all work out, so yeah, I appreciate your support. I, not unlike the military, I'm not allowed to talk about my boss at this particular juncture. But I'll let you know what's going on.
Okay. Don't go anywhere, because when I get in the car in the morning and you guys are on, I'm so excited.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. Take care.
Take care, Satya.
Okay, bye-bye.
Now, you know, she hit on the central problem that is facing the Democratic Party right now.
Is that, like, they got all these people that are like, the hell with Bush, but... Exactly.
Where is it? What is it? Where is it going?
You said something encouraging. It looks like that Mark Warner from Virginia, after the big resounding momentum that brought his underling, his lieutenant governor,
Kane,
into office, it looks like he's putting the apparatus into place. And this is a guy that a lot of people are banking on, in the sense that no one really knows him. His heart's in the right place. He believes in a very basic Democratic platform, and he might be. That makes it. I got excited when
and
he
he's got
me.
A plan.
Well,
a plan.
Really? A plan? Wait, is this a Democrat?
A Democrat with a plan. More on that later.
I think we're going to replay Bruce Cherry from yesterday.
By popular demand.
Yes, a lot of people didn't get to hear that. So we'll hear Bruce Cherry's pitch of the week in a minute, and we're going to talk to veterans later. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, and it is Veterans Day. We have been opening the lines to veterans, 866-303-2270. We're going to do a little comedy now, if that's okay. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. All right. Here we go. Yeah. Go, Brendan. All right. From ABC News, House drops Arctic drilling from bill. House drops Arctic drilling from bill. Translation, oil companies decry losing 1/20 of 1% of the world's oil. From the Washington Post, Television more oversexed than ever, study finds. Television more oversexed than ever, study finds. Translation, viewers hit channel changers harder, deeper. All right. You know, some days you try and it just doesn't happen.
I'm glad you translated that one, though, because that first headline is dishonest.
Yeah, it is dishonest. And we didn't talk about that yesterday, and I know this is something that really pisses you off. And we'll talk about it later today. From the Associated Press, security guard fired for seeing ghosts. Security guard fired for seeing ghosts. Translation. Now who you gonna call? That was cute. That was a cute one. Look, yesterday we did a bit, and this doesn't usually happen, but Bruce Cherry actually might have hit on something. We have a writer who is pitching, has been deliberate, just diligently pitching every week, new characters, and we play it usually later in the show, but since it's early, it's a holiday, we wanted to share this with some people that may not have heard Bruce Cherry's pitch of the week. So here's the one from yesterday. Bruce Cherry has been trying to get a regular character on the show. He doesn't have that much longer to do it. His presentations have delighted staff and listeners alike. What can I say, people? Well, it says right here that I should say he serves a heapin' helpin' of funny with trenchant observation on the side.
I wrote that.
Yeah, it's very good. Now it's time for my favorite part of the week. Please welcome my dear friend Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
That last part.
Did I rush through it? I went too fast?
I think people got the gist.
You look great. You didn't shave, but you got the big sideburns like a creepy hippie.
That's right. Let's work in the visual element for the listeners at home.
You're a beautiful man, Bruce Cherry.
What, they could imagine me any way they wanted, you know. I could look like Colin Farrell.
I'm just amazed that a guy your age is actually, you know, staying svelte at 160 pounds and maintains those sideburns and all your hair, and it's trimmed nicely. A crew cut's a weird choice, but I like it.
A man my age? What's so weird about being 28?
I
can live in a fantasy world.
You look good for a roly-poly gnomish hippie guy. Go ahead.
My cover's blown.
What do you got?
Okay. Yeah. We've been on the wrong track. As you know, I'm pitching the thing.
I'm waiting.
We've been on the wrong track.
Mumbling.
Everything has been, it's just too much current events. I had the terrorist duck, the oversexed monkey. Mm-hmm. Intensely topical stuff, right?
Very popular, the oversexed monkey.
It was a funny sound.
Yeah, go ahead.
A monkey having sex. The listeners want to know you.
Yeah.
Mark, people can't resist.
Are you serious?
People cannot know. They can't resist the story of the coal miner's son who worked his way up from poverty in Appalachia.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have a problem with that?
No.
Maybe. Oh, okay. Because it's called myth building.
Okay.
If you got that. I'm going to create an everyman persona, like give you a background that people relate to you on.
Okay.
Kind of two words, blue-collar comedy.
Okay, all right, okay.
You may be tempted to say that's actually three words.
That's three words.
That would be the sort of over-intellectualizing that turns off the masses.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just didn't understand that. That one was in bold.
Yeah, I know, okay. I typed it at midnight.
But I thought that was a heading, not a dialogue.
Okay.
All right, let's do this. Do we have a script for this thing that you have? Go ahead.
Here we go. We're going to script right now.
Okay,
each week, you get visited by an old family friend, and that lets listeners have a little sort of a peek into your own background. An old family friend named Merle from your home in Pigeon Fork.
Where's that?
It doesn't matter.
Okay, all right. Hey, here we go. We'll be right back with more. Whoa, who's entering the studio?
Well, I know you. You're that radio guy. Do you remember me?
Of course I do. You're Merle, a friend of my father's from my old hometown.
That's me. You remembered.
Yeah, Merle, you've been freeloading on my couch for the last 6 weeks.
This is eerie.
You owe me $400 for the phone bill.
Enough small talk. Mark, I was just thinking of something your father used to say.
Used to say? Merle, my father is still alive.
I know. He stopped saying this a while back. He used to say, you can take the boy out of the country, but if you dress him up like a little girl, you'll cause permanent psychological damage.
Hey. Hey, enough about that.
I know. Your dad's awful sorry about that. But in that taffeta, you look just like a little princess.
All right. So I get it. You're building the myth that I was raised as a girl.
Yeah, I know. People relate to childhood trauma, Mark. Having your parents dress you as a girl is one of the most common.
All right.
But... Okay, back to script.
All right.
You know, Your daddy once told me something very profound.
Really? What was that, Merle?
I don't know. I didn't write it down or nothing. Point is, the man wasn't a complete idiot. Mark, I had a lot of respect for your father.
What is this, Green Acres? My father is not dead.
I know. I lost respect for him. But I shouldn't talk bad about the deceased.
Merle, my dad is not deceased.
I didn't say deceased. I said diseased.
Oh.
We were in the Korean War together, and that man spent a lot of time in brothels.
Wait. You can't make my father into some Korean War whoremonger.
Military's very big now, Mark. Just go with it. And Mark, I gotta tell you, your daddy made a deal with the devil. He sold his eternal soul to Satan, and in return, he got a satellite dish.
A satellite dish?
I didn't say it was a good deal with the devil. Your daddy didn't know how to haggle. He could rule the world, but no, he wanted ESPN.
Uh-huh.
An odd choice, considering your father's well-known homosexual propensities.
This is absurd. My dad's not gay.
Mark, your daddy make Liberace look like Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
Can you deny that for years, your father had an unnaturally close relationship with his quote-unquote best friend, and that relationship was fraught with homoerotic overtones?
Now, Merle, you're my dad's best friend.
And thus in a unique position to judge.
All right, okay. All right, that's it. You made my father into a gay hillbilly who consorts with prostitutes and sold his soul to the devil and raised me as a girl.
Isn't it great? You're overcoming adversity.
Uh-huh.
People relate to you.
Uh-huh.
It's like suddenly you're human again. Wait, I think Riley has some feedback.
Mark, let me just say this. Totally on my own. I've worked with you for almost 2 years. This is the first time I feel I really know you. What a powerful biographical piece.
I don't know.
You don't want to open up.
What?
You don't want to open up to the people. I'm telling you, that's what's going to crack everything.
You know what's going through my head is my dad is going to be sitting in New Mexico trying to figure out, like, is he mean this? Is this real? Is he trying to slander me? I don't know. You know, I don't need this crap from my own kid. I'm going to call him and send him a weird email.
Yeah. On the ad day.
I'm sorry, man. I'm
supposed to actually have a non-gay hillbilly father.
But, you know, he's going to go like, I don't know anyone named Merle. That's the email I'm going to get. Who the hell's Merle? And wait, no, I don't know if this is going to work because it's going to, my dad, you know.
Okay.
What?
I could retool it to include your mom.
All right. Well, that might be good. That might be interesting. All right. That was the Bruce Cherry pitch of the week from yesterday. It was interesting. I thought it was very funny. And also, we got an email and someone wrote in saying, I always thought Bruce Cherry was a black man. I just saw a picture on the internet. He still sounds black, though. Now I was trying to listen to him. It doesn't. How can he say that?
Wow. I don't know,
but that's interesting. The illusion of radio, my friends. We had a guest yesterday.
Who was that sent that? Because I want to send him some letter to him. Wayne Gilman is white.
How about that woman yesterday walks up to Wayne and said, you don't look like I thought
like
you would.
Like I thought you would. Yeah,
I thought you'd be tall. And what would they say?
The quote was, you didn't look how I imagined you. To which Wayne said, well, how did you imagine me? And she says, well, I thought you'd be very tall and have high cheekbones. And he's like, well, now I'm embarrassed.
Poor Wayne. He's at home stretching himself.
No, he's not. He's driving into a pillar on the FDR Drive here in New York.
I think
he just heard this.
He said to her, a lot of times I get, hey, you look like Sharpton. Which is interesting because that was also something we talked about yesterday.
Well, we should talk about that a little more. When Wayne gets in, I want to ask him to come in a little later. We're going to continue our conversation on Veterans Day about veterans issues in just a little while. And he's got a story that he's shared with me before about a recruitment situation. But before we get into that, I do want to talk about that because we had a little racial kind of engagement around it, a joke yesterday. It's a joke that I told Roddy.
Roddy Doyle.
Roddy
that's
Doyle.
That's not racial, that's ethnic.
Okay, it's ethnic, but it became, then the conversation we got into yesterday became sort of loaded in a weird way, because in all honesty, and if you remember this from yesterday and you want to pipe in on the phone, go ahead, 866-303-2270. This was a joke I told about the Irish guys, and I'll retell the joke in a minute, but I do want to say that what happened was, it is a joke that involves a couple of Irish guys and some Indians. There's a scalping is mentioned. There's an insinuation of a stupidity that I didn't read, and maybe I'm not as not as sensitive as I thought, because maybe I'm insensitive, because then little Goliath, our intern, brought up something about offending one group that I didn't even think about. Well, it got very convoluted, and it got very complicated, but it still gets to the issue of what is, you know, ethnic stereotyping and what is inappropriate or politically incorrect, because there's a couple of things that I just didn't know. And I think we're going to continue the conversation in a couple minutes, because I got an email from a very angry listener, who wanted me to retell the joke. He wanted me to, should I tell I'll wait till after the break, or should I tell the joke now? All right, well, here's the original. This is the one I heard, and some of you can be like, I can't believe he's doing this again. All right, I got to be honest with you. When my interpretation of the joke was completely different than anything else that I got so far. I told that I waited till Roddy Doyle was leaving, and I said, you know what we were talking about, this Irish spirit thing, the spirit of the Irish, reminds me of this joke that I heard, and it's about these two Irish guys who immigrate from Ireland in the 1800s, and they're in a bar, and they're like, how do we make some money? And the bartender said, well, there's not a lot of jobs here, but if you go out west, they're paying $1 per scalp for Indian scalps. So these two guys get in a coach, they go out west, they get a couple of horses, they go out into the Wild West, and they're looking around, and up on a ridge, all of a sudden, they're surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of Indians, and one Irish guy says to the other, we're going to be rich. Now, I didn't see that as... First of all, I didn't see it as a stupid joke. One guy wrote in and, you know, said that's one of those sort of basic ethnic jokes. You can put in Italians, you can put in Polish people, you can put in whatever. I actually thought there was some sort of poetic spirit to it, that there's this hard-headed determination. So then Dave, our intern, says this.
You know what I like, though? I like that it's offensive to Irish people and not Indians. Like, yeah. It's a joke about scalping Indians.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the Irish people that you're worried about offending.
Well, you know, that was a little Goliath. He's not an intern. He's paid. I don't want to offend him. But, you know, he is Dave. But here we go. So the issue was, yes, I mean, I guess there was an issue with the Indians. But in my head, in my dumb comedian's head, I guess I just saw that they had the upper hand in this situation. The Irish guys were so determined that they couldn't see that they were in trouble, and I just saw them as the victim in the situation. I was just looking at the joke for what it was and maybe not assessing this properly. But man, we got an email from a woman who is angry about this joke. I'll read it to you in a second. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. Whether I'm waking up in Crawford, Texas, Washington, D.C., or Vacaville, California, I wake up with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Fifty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Doing an email thing. We will be talking about veterans issues in just a few minutes. Got a couple of calls on the line. It is Veterans Day. Look at this. So I told you before the break there about the joke about the Irish guys, and yeah, we got a couple of emails. Some saying it's just a standard ethnic joke to make them look stupid, but my misunderstanding was I thought it represented a sort of stubborn determination. And then there was the issue of the Indians. All right, well, if you didn't hear it all, that you just have to pick it up as we go along. So I get this email. I'm quoting the email. I tuned in to the last 15 minutes of your show today, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I know I may have missed something that might have explained why you were spewing racist dialogue about Mexicans and Latinos, which we weren't. We were having a discussion. I'll get into that in a minute. Let's get to the joke. Was why you were spewing racist dialogue about Mexicans and Latinos, but I doubt it. The joke about the Irish man and scalping Indians made my stomach turn. It physically hurt. Mark kept apologizing, saying he didn't mean to offend anyone, and proclaiming that he was so sensitive. That's 5-0, so. 5-0s. Those are tired old statements of someone who is trying to act sensitive. In an attempt to sensitize yourselves and your audience, why don't you tell the Indian joke again tomorrow, but switch Jews with Indians and the Irishman with a German and scalping with gas chambers? Say that one on the air tomorrow and then claim your sensitivity and, of course, meekly apologize. All right, well, let's try that. All right. So these two Jewish guys immigrate from two German guys immigrate from Germany to the United States. It's during the Wild West, And they go into a bar, maybe a German bar, and they go, you know, where can we get work around here, you know? And the bartender says, there's no work here. You have to go out west. And if you gas some Jews out west, they're paying a buck a Jew. So these two German guys go in a coach out west and get some horses, and they go out into the wilderness, and all of a sudden they realize they're surrounded. They're up on a ridge. There's hundreds of Jews, up on a ridge. And one guy, German guy, looks at the other guy and says, we're going to be rich. Well, you know, I do have to apologize because that was not funny at all. And I got to be honest with you. I think that Nina's problem is she's certainly lacking in sense of humor. But let's say there's another suggestion here that will make everything okay. See how funny that is? It wasn't funny, though. It wasn't funny at all. And it's not even the same joke, really, because the context is completely different and the time frame's all screwed up. And I mean, if there is anything charming about the ethnic joke that I told yesterday was that there's several different interpretations and there is a little switch on the victim, you know, because in the progressive mindset, when you say Indian, they're automatically the victim, and they are automatically like, what are you going to talk about? What are you going to say about Native Americans? See, this is a weird thing that is rarely talked about in any thorough way in terms of the liberal community. But then she makes another suggestion. If you want an updated version of the joke, you could replace Indians with Palestinian children and replace Irishmen with Israeli soldiers and scalping with shooting. Now that's a real knee slapper. No, it's not. And again, the context is different. I don't even think I need to tell that joke because I can already tell it's not going to be funny because the guys who were the ones saying that we're going to make a bunch of money were actually the victims in the joke. So if you just extract the poetics of the joke and reorganize things to suit your political agenda, mine didn't have a political agenda, but yours clearly is one of humorless liberal person. I happen to be a liberal person that has a sense of humor. And I think that what you're talking about before in this email about our discussion with Mexican and Latinos, again, this is the weirdest thing. And I'm being honest here. Maybe it's insensitivity that I'm experiencing, but I saw something about the spirit of people in that first joke, not about stupidity. I saw a guy in the booth from where I'm sitting yesterday who looked exactly like Horatio Sanz. I had no idea.
That's questionable whether he looked exactly like
him. He wasn't laughing
at himself. But he looked like Horatio Sanz enough for me to say, wow, maybe Horatio Sanz is going to be doing something on the air here somewhere in my head. So I'm like, is that Horatio?
He just so happened to be wearing a mechanic's outfit.
And didn't speak English.
Right, but the issue that she had was I said, I said Mexican, then I said Latino, and I said it's wrong to call all Latino Mexicans, obviously, because you don't know where they're from.
And I believe Dave Goliath's quote was, Horatio Sanz is not Mexican, he's some other Latino type of
maybe,
guy.
Maybe, he said maybe, and that is
he's
fine.
He's definitely not Mexican.
Okay, but that's fine. And I wasn't using Mexican in a derogatory way. I just wasn't. And maybe I'm being lazy about it. Maybe I'm being socially irresponsible. But why can't you say, what's wrong with walking up to somebody and saying, are you Mexican or where do you come from? Or making assumptions and then being corrected. Why do we have to pretend like people aren't different in that way? Because by doing that, by treating everybody as if they have no nationality or not making those kind of suppositions, you're actually denying them a history. Am I wrong?
I don't know. You're making my head hurt.
But I don't know, Riley. It just seems to me that by trying to avoid this stuff, which I do, which makes me sensitive, but I think it makes me more of a coward. It makes me not sensitive. It makes me self-censoring.
No, look, here's what happens in American life, and I think the woman that sent the email knows this already. These conversations happen in private rather than public forums. Okay?
They didn't yesterday.
Yeah, well, no. Yesterday was public for us, but most people have these kinds of discussions amongst themselves.
Oh, man, so that means we should talk about it more here. Damn.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
All right, well, look, we'll be back. We're going to talk about veterans' issues and about the Republicans failing. 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Blah, blah, blah. blah, 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 blah.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
The Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It is Veterans Day. We would like to engage in some conversation with veterans at 866-303-2270. Look, you know, we were just talking on the break about what this day means and what it should mean. You know, progressives get a bad rap. Liberals get a bad rap from the right. Of course, that's not unusual. But the thought that we are not supportive of people who are in uniform, I think, is a little misguided. I believe that the best way to support the troops, certainly in this situation, is to bring them back as quickly as possible. From all indications, this administration has worked against them, not for them, in terms of initially not having enough outfitting or rigging for them, and also just the cuts that are being made. I mean, before George Bush was reelected, it was reported that he planned to cut nearly $1 billion from veterans programs in his second term. And I'll tell you, it's all, anytime they cut social programs or, you know, outpatient programs, it's going to affect veterans. And anytime you cut the VA, it's going to affect veterans, obviously. And there's a lot of these guys that are coming back with, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, suicidal thoughts, you know, shattered families, missing limbs. Many of them are homeless. The number of homeless vets in this country on any given night is about 200,000. And there's many services that are trying to help these guys. But a lot of times with the homelessness, a lot of those programs are designed to deal with women, with children, to displaced families. They're not necessarily designed to deal with single men. And also, most of them are community-based, you know, through veterans organizations. And what these guys need, certainly if you're homeless, you need a coordinated effort that provides a secure housing, you know, good food, or at least nutritional food, physical care, substance abuse, aftercare, mental health counseling. I mean, these are the important things that we're around in terms of what you talk about social programs. I mean, this is one of the most important ones. I think that substance abuse programs and veterans issue programs, and also just dealing with homelessness in general, is some of the most important stuff that the government should be dealing with.
Well, it is. And one of the things that veterans groups will tell you is that the programs that work the best are the ones where you have veterans who are able to inspire other veterans. In other words, in a group situation where some of the vets are starting to see their way out of this, they're starting to get apartments, they're starting to get jobs, and that way, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats under those circumstances.
Absolutely, and I'll be honest with you, when you're dealing with what these guys are dealing with, which I can't even claim to understand or begin to imagine, after going through what could be 3 or 4 tours of duty in Iraq because the military is overstretched, to sit there and watch your friends get killed, to deal with the constant rush of cortisol and adrenaline from being in a guerrilla situation, to come back to family chaos because of detachment, and to come back with that stuff in your head, to come back with substance abuse issues. Look, I have dealt with substance abuse issues, and just those by themselves is a day-to-day struggle, to be compounded by the nightmares that these guys carry with them at all times, and these women as well. I can't even fathom it, and to know for a fact that this administration, that we have a president that will not go to military funerals, that we have a bunch of guys running this war that never were in war, and they dragged us into it, you know, based on a bunch of lies, to have to deal with that insensitivity coming from the command structure, must be just mind-blowing.
Well, the other thing you just hit on, Mark, is the fundamental contradiction that the average military person, be they active duty or veteran, faces. The military in America and the military around most of the world is structured on going out, having a mission, and completing that mission. And now you have veterans and active duty soldiers faced with the reality that, yeah, Bush declared victory in May of 03, but the fact of the matter is the job hasn't been done yet, and there are people that are starting to question whether the job can be done. And that's the worst possible scenario to be in if you're a military person.
And I got to be honest with you, Riley. We were talking on the break that, you know, Veterans Day is not really honored as much as it used to be during the period of the great wars in this country, World War II, World War I. You know, even Korea had started to trickle up, but certainly Vietnam and the framing of the veteran as hero in this country, you know, certainly took a big hit. And I will admit that I am guilty on a progressive level of utilizing this day to talk about not going to war, to talk about ending war, to talk about taking the troops, bringing them back home on Veterans Day. I think that's where the frame needs to go, because it is very clear to this country, for the most part, if you're not delusional, that this administration not only exploits veterans on a day-to-day basis, but has them fighting there for reasons that are based in misinformation and lies.
Oh, yeah. Now, there are, to be fair, Veterans Day parades and celebrations going on all over the country. The problem is, if you take them all together, and remember that Veterans Day originated in this country as Armistice Day, which was November 11th, 1918, which is when the First World War ended. When that war ended, there were gigantic parades up and down the streets of cities and towns across America, because American soldiers were returning from having completed a mission,
right,
from having done something and won at it. Same
Got
with
it.
World War II.
Got
Since
it.
Then, we haven't had that same situation, haven't had the same closure in any of these wars.
That's right. That's a good point, man. And thanks for telling me that. Nick, in Staten Island, we're taking some veterans calls. We got a couple on here. Let's talk to Nick. What's on your mind, Nick?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
I'm okay.
Hey, Nick, how you feeling?
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
All right, and welcome aboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys rock.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely rock. And thank you so much for talking about everything you're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm wearing a baseball cap on my head from the Homeless Vets Rehabilitation Program in Menlo Park, California.
Mm-hmm.
That's where vets go with substance abuse issues. I worked there for 9 months.
Oh, wow.
Years ago. 11 years ago today, I was in the Marine Corps. I went to Parris Island 19 years ago today.
19 years ago today.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is kind of not what I'm going to want to talk about. A year ago today in Fallujah,
yeah.
Marine, Bledsoe, second lieutenant,
mm-hmm.
pissed away in the streets of Fallujah for Paul Wolfowitz.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to, I think this day should be kind of about him.
Okay.
And his family.
Okay.
No.
You know him personally, Nick?
No. I just stumbled upon it. The week after the election, and yeah, this administration threw this young man's life away for nothing.
Okay. All right. So now,
yeah.
Now, what's your been experience? How long you've been out of the Marines?
I got out on September 21st, 1990. I'm 15 years. I'm 41 years old.
Did you see any combat yourself there, Nick?
Technically, I'm a Gulf War vet, but I got out during Desert Shield and Desert Storm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just when I hit the 99-day mark, which is real big for Marines that don't really like being in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
That's the day the tanks rolled in Kuwait.
Oh, okay.
45 days later, I was out. So fortunately, I served peacetime.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Nick. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it,
man.
All right. Well, it's interesting. Well, good for him for helping out, at least in the substance abuse area, because
yeah.
that all that requires, there's nothing professional that you can bring to that. If you bring experience to that, and if you bring with substance abuse stuff, anyone who deals with substance abuse issues usually comes from a background of substance abuse themselves. I'm not saying about Nick, but it really is part of the whole recovery process for everybody involved. You have to have people willing to talk about their own issues around that. Brian in Dayton, what's on your mind, Brian?
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, Brian?
First of all, I just want to say I don't want to take anything away from our veterans that have been over there and have fought and hurt them and got hurt and maimed in war and combat zones.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want you guys to remember there's a lot of us out there, including myself, that were injured and just in peacetime, injured, permanently injured for the rest of our lives, you know, that never saw any combat, and it's just from training. That's, you know, the training is so intense that a lot of people I know lost their lives and were injured permanently.
Really?
During basic?
Training.
Wow.
That's something you don't hear about. My time at Fort Campbell, I was there for 3 years, and over 50 people died.
Really?
I never
knew.
Wow, we got to get hold of some of those numbers, man. That is my... I saw Full Metal Jacket, and it looked pretty nasty.
That is extreme, but like I said, there's a lot of people. I fell out of a helicopter because of equipment failure.
Oh,
you know,
man.
My back screwed up. And that's another point I wanted to make real quick. You're talking about the VA benefits. And going to the hospital, I am treated as a second-rate person because I wasn't injured in a combat zone.
Wow.
So it's even twice as hard for us veterans, to get treatment out there because we're kind of put off in the priority list.
So they parse it like that, Brian. They actually say, you know, who were the people injured in combat and the people who weren't.
I'm sorry?
In other words, they really parse it that closely. In other words, they separate out people who were injured in combat versus people who were injured in training or in a non-combatant situation.
It's all on your records, how you got injured and what how your service connected for.
Wow, that's
yeah, that's all on your record, and it's twice as hard to get any treatment when you're not a veteran of a war.
Well, well, thanks for sharing that information with us today, and you know, and have a good day. We're certainly going to look into what you were saying before. That's some interesting stuff about how many people
injured
get
in training, yeah.
And die in training. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.
Wow. Yeah, it's really it's there's so many things you don't hear about, and there's so many issues that revolve around veterans' issues that have nothing to do with actual combat.
No, it's absolutely true. And, you know, you have a lot of people, for example, and this happens a lot in Iraq, where you have people who are part of those supply companies. We talked to some people, some soldiers who were part of the caravans that used to run supplies to the frontline troops, and they were being attacked. Now, I don't know whether they consider that combat or not. They were involved in supplying people with stuff. I would imagine they'd have to be treated as combat injuries. At least I'd hope so.
Yeah, you would think. We'll continue this conversation in a little while, but coming up, we got Mark Riley's Dog of the Week, and we got Morning Sedition Radio Theater. So stay tuned for that. It's 17 past. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Old Time Radio Players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Despite the rumors, Mark Maron has a big, big future on Morning Sedition. So we've lined up some great new shows for him this fall. First, Mark Maron gets his own sitcom. Get set for On Your Mark.
Honey, I'm home.
Oh, Mark, bad news. This sitcom is canceled.
What? But we haven't even done a joke yet. No, wait. That wasn't a joke either.
After that, Mark becomes a game show host for Morning Sedition's version of Wheel of Fortune.
There's one L on the board.
I'd like to guess the phrase.
Go ahead.
The phrase is, Mark, your contract hasn't been renewed. Please pack up your desk.
That's absolutely right. What?
For a double dose of quiz shows, Mark will be a contestant on Jeopardy.
The category is TV and movies for $200. Be sure to phrase your response in the form of a question. The answer is you. Yes, Mark Maron.
Who is going to be fired?
And top off the evening as Mark Maron makes a dramatic guest appearance on ER.
Doctor, he's trying to tell us something.
Christo, fascist, zombie.
He's gone, and we never found out his name. Do you have any idea who he is, Doctor?
I've never seen that man before in my life.
That's coming up this fall on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
All right. That was funny, Riley.
Oh, yeah. We're going to hell, all of us.
Again? All right, well, you know what time it is now. It's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Well, Mark, I got to tell you, yep. Dogs abound this week.
Yes.
From New York to far-flung reaches of the world.
Mm-hmm.
How about the guy from Brooklyn who's planning to evict his 80-something-year-old aunts from an apartment house he plans to then sell for a cool $1 million? And what to make of a mother who leaves her two small sons alone in a bathtub to have one of them drown? Her lawyer says she's a good-hearted woman with a hard luck story. Whatever.
Yeah.
The dog this week, listeners, doesn't come from our shores. We've all read, seen, and heard quite a bit about the violence in France.
Mm.
In times of trouble, there's usually somebody standing by to pimp the misery of others to their own advantage. So it is with xenophobic far-right leader Jean-Marie Le Pen. He says the riots have swelled the ranks of his National Front Party. He argues that immigration from third world countries creates problems not just for France, but for the whole of Europe. Le Pen says people with immigrant backgrounds who commit crime should be summarily deported, something some people in France seem to have taken up already. He includes in this people born in France of immigrant parents. Jean-Marie Le Pen is no joke. He got as far as the second round of the last presidential elections in France. He makes no bones about the fact that he plans to run again. For immigrant scapegoating in the pursuit of personal political power, Jean-Marie Le Pen is the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
You know, when I started reading those stories, Riley, it's interesting to me because a guy like that who seizes on the opportunity to put forth an anti-immigrant nationalist platform, it's interesting how those guys sort of, you know, come out of the violence and chaos around them. Because I remember it happening here after 9/11. I swear to God, I thought I knew people. Yeah. I really thought I knew people. But in the midst of that chaos and that anger and that grief and that violence, I was surprised at just how many people that I thought I knew said, we should get rid of all of them. All the Arabs should be just thrown out of this country or put in prisons or killed, some people said.
Hey, there were people that wrote this on the pages of New York City newspapers,
yes,
after September 11th.
And they know
who they are.
And I'll tell you, it's a tremendous credit to our system of government, if there is any credit to give, and the people of this country, that stuff, you know, outside of the fact that it has happened to some degree, we still have 500 or so people in Guantanamo who are sitting there being held not on charges. Some people were detained, not only illegally, but they were not guilty of anything or were later released. But it is a testament to the people of this country that we weren't allowed to let this place drift into something that really resembled a type of fascism that this guy Le Pen, actually, I have to say, has a shot at bringing to France if he is able to muster up enough hatred.
Well, see, xenophobes always tap into the worst fears of people wherever
exactly.
They are. They tap into people's fears about their jobs. They tap into people's fears about housing, education. All of the gut bucket issues can get tied when somebody's not working and they see someone that they think is from somewhere else that has a job. That's where it starts.
The immigrants are always a scapegoat. And the interesting thing to me is also that why isn't there somebody saying we have to address policy. We have to address that. The fact is that we have institutional racism, you know, in France, and that needs to be addressed. And I think that exists here as well.
Even Chirac, a right-wing guy, understands that part of it.
Right. It's going to be very exciting. We're going to have Anne Rice in here to talk about her new book about Jesus.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk to about veterans issues and about the Republican defeats in Virginia. There were people crying, Riley.
Yes.
And you know what? It made me happy.
Me
I'm sorry.
Too.
27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Rioting in France has slowed down considerably. French authorities finally came up with a way to calm people down: arresting them. The violence ended abruptly when it dawned on the French that their situation might be causing foreigners to pity them. There you
poor
go. Republicans are blaming California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger for the failure of four ballot initiatives that voters rejected. Experts say voters turned away from Arnold's four initiatives even faster than they did from his last four movies. Said one Republican strategist, you know, things have gotten bad when you can't even count on an Austrian former bodybuilder turned movie actor to successfully enact a conservative domestic political agenda. Pathetic. A judge in Iowa ruled that a security guard who was fired for seeing ghosts was entitled to unemployment benefits. When the supervisor refused to believe there were any ghosts present, the guard climbed into the mystery machine and took off with his friends and their talking dog. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes for today. Our next guest is an acclaimed novelist, perhaps best known for her best-selling Vampire Chronicles, which my wife Misha said got her through high school. She's now turned her attention to the life of Jesus Christ. Her latest novel, Christ the Lord, Out of Egypt, releases this week. Anne Rice joins us in studio. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming. I guess I'm going to ask the question that everybody has on their minds. How do you go from a career of vampires and darkness to Jesus?
I guess it actually makes sense.
It does make sense. I mean, the vampire novels I wrote were always spiritual novels, and they were all about good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
They were just about being lost and being in despair.
Okay.
And I went through a personal conversion.
You did?
I did. I went back to the Catholic Church in 1998. My faith came back, and the vampires and the witches, they were no longer the metaphorical powerhouse for me that they used to be.
Now, was it just metaphor, or were you in your own sense of self-doubt or spiritual wandering? Was the world sort of filled with a sort of darkness and evil?
It wasn't filled with evil, but it was filled with darkness, and that's really what they're about.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting, because I see there's some, it's interesting, I think there are themes. I actually know there's a book out there called Christ the Vampire.
Really?
There is actually a book out there written. It's sort of a marginal book, but it's interesting. There is a lot of blood in the Catholic religion.
There is indeed a lot of blood, and the symbolism of the Catholic religion used to be all through my books.
Mm-hmm. Now, you start, and this is an incredible narrative, in terms of telling Christ's story from Christ's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But seven, why did you start at seven?
You know, I can't really answer that except it was instinctive. That was the scene that came to mind. I had read the early apocryphal gospels, the legends,
mm-hmm.
about Jesus as a child having supernatural powers. And I thought those legends were really powerful. They were around for over 1,000 years. People read those legends and considered those to be pious stories. And I was struck by a couple of the incidents from those gospels. His making the sparrows out of clay.
Out of clay,
then
yeah.
came to life. And the fact that he had the power of life and death over people.
You know what really struck me about that is because for me personally, it's like my life story kind of came into focus at about seven. You know, I have very mm-hmm. vivid memories of what my life was like starting mm-hmm. at about between 6 and 7 years old. So I just wondered if that was something that came from your own experience of really, you know, coming, having your life come into focus at a particular time.
Well, you know, that's probably exactly what happened because I remember vividly being 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I remember going to school and making my first confession and my first communion and all of that. And I don't have that many memories from being 4 and 5. I have some memories from 3 and 4 yeah. and 5, but not anything like the memories.
I remember the beatings. No.
I'm sitting here trying to remember what my childhood. I think my memory starts around 4 years ago.
What a great blessing.
You know, and now I have to figure out what is with my parents. Now, this is interesting. Do you plan to continue writing Christ books? I mean, is this going to be your angle from here on out?
I want to finish the life of Christ, and since I only got 1 year in this book, age 7 to 8, it means another 3 or 4 books.
I apologize for not knowing the nuances of the book. I know what you're telling me about the age now, and I would. Is there any point in this book where is there any comedic? Is there any levity around the idea of a child, knowing his father is God or knowing he has these powers? Is there any humor in the book?
There is humor in the book.
Okay,
there is. There's subtle humor.
Yeah.
There are jokes that are made within the family about the powers Jesus has.
Is there any sort of like, come on, Mom, who's my dad?
Well, that's kind of the focus of the book.
Oh, really?
You know, Jesus
okay.
asking questions about all the whispering that's going on about Bethlehem mm-hmm. and why they had to go to Egypt, and now they're on the verge of going back to the Holy Land, and he wants to know the answers. And for me, Jesus is God, and he is divine from the very beginning, but I felt that he didn't include all that knowledge every minute in his awareness, that obviously if he came here to live for over 30 years, he wanted to experience things. And he wanted to know life in a human way. And so it's about the awakening of this child that can know everything if he wants, but doesn't choose to know everything. And he's trying to find it out in the human way from those around him. And it's really the story of Christmas told from his point of view as he finds out what went on.
Our guest is Anne Rice. She's the author of, among other books, Christ the Lord Out of Egypt. It's her latest novel. Did you experiment a great deal before you found Christ's voice for this novel?
Not really.
No,
I found it. I was very fortunate in hearing that voice right away. I had to rewrite those chapters, though. There were some things that I did that didn't work in the beginning, and I took them out and went back. But it happened amazingly early. I wrote a lot of scenes that will not be in, will not come up till maybe book 3 or book 4. Because since I had the life of Jesus mapped out in the Gospels, I was able to go ahead and write scenes far in advance. But this childhood scene I wrote very early.
Do you think that you're going to get any, there's a couple of fronts that you could get flack from. One, the Catholic Church, I would imagine, and two, your old fans who were addicted to vampires and that that world. Have you received any criticism from either side? Do you expect to get any?
The criticism I've seen has largely been criticism from people who don't know my work. They haven't read it.
Okay.
And they perhaps form an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that opinion goes out on the internet and gains a certain speed.
Sure, yeah.
But actually from the Catholics who've read the book, I've received a very warm, generous response.
Well, that's nice. They're probably happy you're back.
Well, they say so.
Now, you were raised in New Orleans.
I was.
And lived there for a good period of time, moved out to California some years ago, am I right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I lived in California for 30 years and then went back to New Orleans for 15 years. Yeah.
What did you feel about what happened with Hurricane Katrina and that sort of thing? Did you feel a tangible tie to the pain that people felt there?
Oh, more than a tangible tie. I was on the phone and emailing constantly and watching the news constantly and wanting to do something, anything to help.
Do you have people down there?
I wrote a piece for the New York Times about it, you know, that got in the paper right away. Yeah, I have a lot of people down there, and they were very hard hit. They lost their houses. They lost everything they had.
It's just awful.
It is.
Are you going, have you been down there since?
No, I have not been down there, and I know at some point I will go back, and I'm not looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to seeing the devastation. I mean, my friends down there and my family, those people are incredibly courageous, and they're rebuilding in circumstances that sound absolutely abysmal.
As a Catholic and as a writer and as somebody who has experienced a lot and thought about a lot of things, I mean, how do you feel about religion in this country and how it's used by, you know, politicians, by the extreme right wing of the Republican Party? Do you have any sort of thoughts about that, about how the story of Christ or how the idea of Christianity is misused?
Well, I do have a lot of thoughts about it, but the talent would be to put it in a way that does not sound strident mm-hmm. or condemning. I think the main thing that we have to do as Christians is to learn to love and to serve, that those are the two things. And we should leave the condemning to the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Let him do that sort of thing.
Can I go ahead and assume that people who condemn are devils?
No, I don't think you can assume that.
Oh.
I think that's part of the trick, that we don't want to assume that. We want to be as loving to people as we can, even people who stand right in our faces and tell us that we're the devil.
I've had that happen.
We want to be...
How about yesterday?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier that this is one of... a series of books you plan on writing about Christ.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because I'm not really that biblical, how the Bible dealt with Christ as a teenager during puberty, that period mm-hmm. of his... Assuming you're going to cover that, how will you deal with it?
Well, I'm not going to focus on it per se. You know, if I deal with it, it'll probably be in flashbacks in the second book. At the end of this book, he's 8 years old.
Yeah.
Is he going to have pimples or anything?
Well,
socially have trouble with dates?
Is the socially awkward Jesus? I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead. I don't mean to make you laugh.
That's fine. No. I really am taking great pains to make this the Jesus of the Gospels and the
okay.
Jesus that I believe in. So whatever I do fictionally make up, to make him come alive, to make him real, I do it within the spirit of the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we know a lot about people in the first century and what their lives were like, mm-hmm. and we know what they did. And, of course, there were no teenagers in the first century. I mean, kids went to work when they were 5 and 6 years old with their parents. And the Jesus in this book works a lot as a carpenter with the family.
With
the whole family works.
It's weird. It would seem there'd be an opportunity there to sort of, as a adolescent, to start that kind of ostracizing that he felt... You know, later in life, you know, for claiming to be who he was, that just to see other kids be like, there's the Son of God, so he says, you know.
Actually, there's a part of the book that kind of almost replicates that when the kid that he kills comes back to life and mm-hmm. starts chasing him around, calling him Son of David, Son of David.
Kicking him, yeah.
And kicking him, yeah.
God, I hate when that happens. well, I got to be honest with you, Anne Rice. It's a pleasure to talk to you and a pleasure to see you laugh. And it's in the book sounds wonderful. I'm looking forward to giving it to my wife, who I swear says you got her through high school with the vampire series. So
great.
This I don't know. It may be in the near future I'll be married to a Catholic.
if this book. Could happen.
Okay. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks
Anna.
A lot.
Thank you. It's been very enjoyable.
Stay tuned for Rapture Watch coming up next. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hey, this is Rob Zombie, and it says here, when I'm watching the sunrise after a long night of waking the dead and toasting nachos in the microwave, I listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Thanks for tuning in. In a few minutes, we're going to get back. I think our whole last hour is going to be dedicated to politics and veterans, so we will take some of those veteran calls. But right now, as you know, the Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah. One of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Butts Corner, Texas. Your grace.
Listen up, ye Satan-kissing Amorites, ye idol-worshipping Canaanites, and annoying new Canaanites living in converted 18th century farmhouses less than 1 hour by train to Manhattan. Program your TiVos for an eternity of teeth gnashing, ye craven Jebusites, sinful Ammonites, and prideful cellulites, mocking God with thy undulating subcutaneous fat junctions protruding from within your dermis. Yeah, you heard me, I don't pull any punches. Don't screw with me, or next week I'll go after sufferers of Klinefelter syndrome.
Oh, no.
I'm here to tell you the master is at the threshold and poised to ring your doorbell and run, but not before leaving a big flaming pile of godly vengeance on your welcome mat. For just as it was written in Ephesians 12, that someday it will be written in Matthew 8, so it was also written in Matthew 8 that someday it will be written in Ephesians 12. Man, was that meta or what? Well, that's neither some tassa montapa nor some other nonsense syllables.
Oh, no.
Because the end times are here. And according to the UPI, or Underworld Press International, a massive star is now moving at fantastic speeds near the outer limits of the Milky Way, near the Doradus constellation. You know what Doradus is another name for, don't you, Mark?
No, what, Jim? I mean, Father, Cardinal.
Fred. I'm pretty sure of that. Anyway, I can tell by that perpetual look of constipation on your face that it's time to crunch a few numbers, Shylock.
Oh,
what? According to my rapture calculator, supplied by the good people of Texas Instruments, the end times are near.
Mm.
Now let's pick this apart like adults, shall we?
Yeah.
The star is named HE4375439. H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. E is the fifth. 8 and 5 are 13. Adding the remaining numbers, 437 and 5439, to get 5,876. Then add the number 13. Then divide by 666, and you get 5.808824288343328. How much time we got?
About 40 seconds, Cardinal.
Okay, let's just round it off to the last four decimals, like Jesus would, Mark.
All right.
5.8008. Quick! What is the significance of those five numbers?
Lame-o.
Riley, what about you? 5-8-0-0-8. What? Tell me about the numbers.
Hi, I'm Mark Riley.
Oh, this is impossible. Can anyone here tell me what the numbers mean?
Hi, I'm Mark Riley.
Free gum?
I'm Mark Riley.
Free gum?
I'm Mark Riley.
Free gum?
I'm Mark Riley.
Hey, guys, did I tell you what my cats did this morning?
Free gum? Free gum?
Dude, wake up.
Huh? What? Wait, is that you, Dave?
Dude, what are you doing here?
Huh? Nothing. I'm not doing anything.
Dude, you gotta stop coming here.
What? I gotta stop coming here? You mean it's over?
Mark and Mark are gone, dude. Riley's working for Tavis Smiley, and Mark's running whores in Hongo.
Running whores in Hongo?
Running whores in Hongo.
Well, what about the numbers, Dave? What do the numbers mean?
Dude, you gotta get out of here. Franken doesn't like people touching his hairpiece.
Okay, but first tell me what the numbers mean, Dave. See, 58008, right here on the calculator.
Dude, if you turn the calculator upside down, the numbers spell boobs. You made me go through 4 pages of dialogue for a boob joke?
Boobs?
Yeah, dude. When I come back, you better be gone.
Oh.
See you later, fornicator. I'll keep the light on for you, or some crap like that.
Boobs? Something had happened. A thing which years ago had been the eagerest hope of many, many good citizens of the town. James Amberson Earl had got his comeuppance. He got it 3 times filled and running over. But those who had so longed for it were not there to see it, and they never knew it. Those who were still living had forgotten all about it, and all about him.
Oh, and dude, you got any pot?
Oh my god, I wish we could just go to break. That was like, I mean, I was into that in my headphones, and I'm like, is it 1940s? That was unbelievable. Jim Earl has outdone himself this morning. We have created some real radio
working
theater
there. Working for Tavis Smiley, huh, pal? We'll discuss that as soon as this show's over.
Tavis is great. I'm writing for him now.
Yeah, it shows.
Okay, so we're gonna come back here in just a few minutes, continue a conversation we were having earlier about veterans issues, 866-303-2270. It is Veterans Day. We want to hear from you to tell some stories or to express your feelings about anything. Also, I want to thank Anna for sending a beautiful package full of cookies and like 20 bags of trail mix. So, everybody, let's go have some nuts. What do you say? Everybody into it? Nuts and raisins, little chocolate Caribbean things. We got enough to last us a year. It was a very nice gesture, and we certainly appreciate it. She sent a T-shirt and some other stuff.
Thanks, Anna.
Yeah, it was... She loves the show. It's so nice to get food. And now it's been a compulsive eating festival at my house. 57 past. Veterans, give us a call. 866-303-2270. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It is 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
It is Veterans Day. Support the troops. I say bring them home as quickly as possible. 1 in 4 veterans in this country are homeless on any given night. There could be 200,000 homeless vets out there in the world somewhere without the support they need. A lot of VA cuts. It's been very difficult. And we're looking at 2,057 Americans killed in Iraq. You know, that is today's count. We're also looking at an administration that has, you know, really does not support veterans' issues in any real way. We've talked to some vets. Also, it's important to realize that we have a president that has never gone to a military funeral, to a recently killed soldier from Iraq's funeral. Never.
He is using veterans. He is using this day as one step in rehabilitating his own image, which has been seriously damaged by, among other things, the war in Iraq.
It's just, it blows my mind. I mean, it just blows my mind. I want to talk about vets. I want to take some vets' calls in just a second. But first, I just want to revel a little bit in the beautiful defeat of Republican Jerry Kilgore by Tim Kaine in the Virginia gubernatorial race yesterday, which left many Republicans, it was Tuesday, sorry, many Republicans stunned and crying, Riley, literally crying. Apparently, men and women wept and huddled in prayer with their children when what was supposed to be a surefire victory party turned into a political funeral. How could this have happened, God? They cried. How could this have happened in the Republican state of Virginia, Lord? They wailed. How could this have happened when the blessed president came down here himself and pressed flesh in public with our candidate, Your Holiness? Well, that would be it right there, my friends. The president is no longer on God's good side. Not even his self-described conversational buddying up to the Almighty can save him from the lies and moral bankruptcy oozing through his pores. He is sinking the GOP ship with the weight of his baggage, my friends. Good people are finally seeing the bad in the heart of the naked emperor.
Well, they are, because, not only did Bush come down there to help this guy out, Kilgore, who ended up losing. Kilgore ran a series of attack ads against Cain, essentially saying that, he's soft on the death penalty, said he wouldn't have executed Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler!
I'll tell you something. It's funny is that Scott McClellan, that's the White House press spokesman, says...
Black.
No kidding. He's trying to cover up. He's like, quote, any thorough analysis of the gubernatorial elections is going to show that the elections were decided on local and state issues and the candidates and their agendas. Wrong! Bush stinks! Now, look, here's another exciting bit of business. Tim Kaine won in cities and counties where Republicans dominated. Even in Virginia Beach, the home of today's idiot.
Yeah.
It's the home of Pat Robertson.
Wow, he's not even a village idiot. He's America's idiot.
I guess God is fed up with these guys dragging his name through the sludge of legislative transgression and sin and death they've been dumping on this country. Finally, the four horsemen may be granted a reprieve if we corral them until the 2006-2008 elections. But Pat Robertson piped in today with something, Riley, didn't he?
Pat Robertson gets on TV last night, actually, yesterday. And, the town of Dover in Pennsylvania got rid of the school board that wanted to push intelligent design into the classrooms.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So Pat Robertson apparently had a problem with that, and this is what he had to say.
I'd like to say to the good citizens of Dover, if there is a disaster in your area, don't turn to God. You just rejected him from your city.
Unbelievable. Who the hell does that guy think he is?
I think he's ill, man. I think he must have there's something wrong with Pat Robertson. I hope he gets medical help.
Well, I hope he dies. Here's the deal. I'm serious, because I hope he dies and he comes back to tell us exactly what hell is like, if there is one. All right? Because Pat Robertson, what he's doing right there is he's screwing with the heads of vulnerable people who are already under some sort of spell. And listen to that guy. To actually say to people that believe, for whatever reasons they have for believing in Pat Robertson or in the God that he claims to represent, for him to say, don't even ask God for help because you don't deserve it. What a mind-screwing thing that is to do. What an abuse of whatever position of power he has. Not that that's surprising, but if you are a follower of Pat Robertson, I doubt you'd be listening to my show, but you should really take into mind that this guy, in a statement like that, is clearly irresponsibly messing with your head.
I mean, this is not the first irresponsible statement out of Pat Robertson. He said, feminism encourages women to kill their children, practice witchcraft, destroy capitalism, and become lesbians. That is more of the wit and wisdom of Pat Robertson. He said the State Department should be blown up with a nuclear device. He also called for the assassination of one Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela. So, I mean, I don't know how anybody watches this, but to say to a town, don't call God, call Darwin, is absolutely insane. There's something nuts. There's something certifiable about saying
that. I hope they do call Darwin so they can evolve past this cultural retardation that seems to be, personified in Pat Robertson. Let's talk to Mike in Denton, Texas. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. I am absolutely great. Glad to be able to talk to you, especially on this Veterans Day.
Yeah, well, thanks for calling. What do you got going on down there in Denton, Texas?
Well, this is sort of my first official announcement of an Air America-ite running for Congress.
Oh, great. Uh-oh.
You took Maron's advice, huh?
yeah, actually I did. I heard your broadcast a couple of weeks ago saying basically you couch punditatos, get up and do something about it. And you did it.
Well, congratulations, man. Congratulations, Mike. I remember when I said that at Florent. So what are some of the steps you're taking? What are you doing?
Well, it's first of all, I've got to confess that I'm running as an independent, not as a Democrat.
That's okay. What district?
District 26, mm-hmm. North Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't mind me kind of saying out the names of some of the towns in the district, I'm not sure everybody knows what district.
Do it. Go for it.
Sure. It stretches from Gainesville in the north, which is up on the Oklahoma border, mm-hmm. down the I-35 corridor through Sanger, Justin, Crum, Ponder, Denton, of course, a little bit of Decatur, Texas, Flower Mound, Little Elm, and the Colony.
Wow, that's very exciting. And when did now? What you've registered? You've signed up? You're ready to go?
You got
to
get petitions done, do you?
Yeah, I've got to get the petitions done. I'm waiting on a letter back from the Secretary of State to tell me exactly how many signatures I have to have. Texas policy is actually kind of odd in this regard. I'm not allowed to collect signatures until after the primaries are done in January. Because I'm running as an independent.
Okay.
The maximum number of signatures that I'll have to have is about 500, and by my count, I'm about a fifth of the way there so far in a week and a half. So.
Have you decided on your platform or the points you're going to be bringing to the people?
Well, it's kind of a tough area. This is about a 77-23 Republican to Democrat district.
Mm-hmm.
And historic, this used to be Dick Armey's old district, in case you were
curious.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're aiming high, huh, Mike?
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to shoot high. I've never held political office. I've never run for political office. But
that's two big pluses.
I think that'll help you out because, you know, in Michigan, they just elected an 18-year-old for mayor. People are very hungry for new ideas and for unjaded people. I think it could really work against you, especially with the culture of Washington at this point. And I think you're in a good place because this administration is giving you a never-ending a storage of fodder to run on.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
yeah.
As far as a platform goes, I've got about 15 volunteers so far, mostly friends and family, that kind of thing. But We're just trying to put together some points to basically say, hey, you know, the Republican Party has been in power, both houses of the Congress and the White House for 5 years. These are the things that they have not done. They have not addressed the fact that there are 200,000 homeless veterans in mm-hmm. this country.
Mm-hmm.
They have not managed to balance the budget. They mm-hmm. have not actually reduced the deficit or solved the issues.
That's for sure. Security. That's for sure. Yeah.
I mean, they've had the opportunity and squandered it, and it's just time to bring some change about.
Well, Mike, congratulations.
Congratulations.
And I'll tell you something. I'm proud of you if that means anything, and I'm really excited, and I think you should check in with us frequently during this process, especially when things get going, to let us know how you're doing.
Consider it done, guys, and thank you so much for being there. I'd like to thank Air America too. Just give a shout out directly to them.
You bet.
You guys have only been on the air here a few months, and it's nice to have another option at 2 a.m. when I'm up, heading to work.
So. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling, Mike.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Okay, take it easy. Wow, that's exciting. A guy who got motivated.
You never know the effect that what you say on the radio is going to have on somebody.
It's a beautiful thing. I got an email yesterday thanking me for reframing a conspiracy theorist as an independent speculative investigator because some poor guy was getting so much flack from his conservative family about his views. They were calling him crazy. You're crazy. And the change in title was enabled him to have a certain amount of pride in the way he thinks. And he was choked up about it. It was a beautiful email. It's 16 past. We got Lawton Smalls, I think, on the line. We'll talk to him, see what's going on Planet Bush. Stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. It is Friday. It is Veterans Day. We're trying to take some calls from veterans. We had a few earlier. Looks like there's a couple waiting on hold. We're going to get Wayne Gilman in here in a little while. He's got a story about some recruiters, predatory recruiters, the worst of people, and his sister when she was younger.
She was younger, yeah.
And we do want to take some calls, 866-303-2270. Right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer. That's a luckily. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now, of course, as always, is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. The winner in a landslide from the kingdom of heaven, the Honorable Jesus Christ.
Okay, good. That's great. That's a nice one.
Always a winner.
Very nice. Hi, how are you? So how about those elections this week, huh, Lawton? It's the beginning of the end of you neocons, my friend.
the beginning of the end of what, Mark? Your harebrained socialist dogma? Because if that's the case, my day just improved 100%.
No.
200%.
No. Goodbye, no, dogma. No, Lawton, the beginning of the end of Republicans' misrule in this country. The people stepped up Tuesday and said, get out, we're done with you.
Oh, Mark.
Yeah.
You're cute. We're just getting rid of the dead wood, Mark.
What?
Thinning the herd.
Uh-huh.
I don't believe in Darwin, obviously, but I do believe in survival of the fittest. Law of the jungle, big fish eat little fish. Adapt or die, Mark. That's my motto.
All right, so wait.
Adapt or die.
Wait, so you're okay with all these Republicans losing? Is that what you're saying? It's okay with you that Republicans are losing?
Read your history, Mark.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the pioneers had to feed a sick baby to the coyotes so everyone else in the wagon train could survive. I have a painting of that in my diary.
Let me just say. Lawton, just curious, my friend. Why do you think they lost? I mean, it couldn't have had anything to do with Bush, could it?
It has everything to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Any candidate who fails to embrace the visionary, brave, and moral authority of President George W. Two Terms Mandate Bush is destined to go plop, splash, right into the bowl, mister. Bless him down, I say. Good riddance.
Uh-huh.
Here's your lovely parting gift,
okay,
loser.
Okay, all right, so you're saying
out of my party, weakling.
This is all some part of some brilliant plan, then.
Of course, Mark.
Uh-huh.
Republicans aren't like y'all. We make plans. You liberals get up in the morning and say, hey, what'll I do today, dude? And then you'll say something like, hey, I could just suck on the bong for a while, maybe cash a welfare check, abuse myself looking at some porn, and then go kill a baby.
Hey, look, don't make fun of my afternoon. All right, well, what about Schwarzenegger losing all the initiatives in California? How about that? All of them. Was that part of the plan, Lawton?
Hey, are you familiar with the term trial balloon?
Yes.
All right, Mark. We never, ever, ever expected those initiatives to pass. We were just pulling a little shock and awe on California.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, when we show them something not nearly that extreme, but still more conservative than anything they've ever, ever passed before, they'll pass it.
Uh-huh.
Threaten folks with a gun, and later they'll say thank you when you hit them with a stick. That's a Rome special right there.
Oh, yeah.
You can smell the turn blossom genius all over that.
I got to be honest with you, Lawton. It smells like desperation to me. Listen, let me tell you something, Lawton. The American people are finally coming around to the idea that Bush and the Republicans are a bunch of immoral, incompetent crooks, liars, thieves. This week proved that, Lawton. They proved it. They're sick of what Howard Dean calls the culture of corruption. And if the Democrats can take back the Congress next year, Bush's agenda is dead, my friend. Dead. We've got the momentum now, my friend. You're about to be on the outside for a long time, Lawton. You're the one who needs to adapt or die. Yeah. Look at you. Uh-huh. What's the matter?
I haven't been sleeping, Mark.
Yeah.
All night long, I just wander the hallways of my split-level ranch house thinking...
Uh-huh.
Talking to my life-size painting of President George W. Two Terms Mandate Bush.
Yeah.
I look right up at him and I ask him, why? Why is everything going wrong?
Uh-huh.
Why have you done this to me?
Yeah.
And one night, he looked me straight in the eye and he said, because you're a screw-up, Lawton Falk.
Oh, no.
A gullible, hapless fool.
Oh, boy.
Good night, sucker.
Oh, man.
I'm so tired.
All right.
Take
it easy, buddy. Take it easy, buddy. All right. You just need some sleep. You gotta stop talking to paintings, okay? You're making me a little concerned. You all right? Oh, boy. Yeah. This happens. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Wait till next year's elections, Mr. Man. You'll be singing a sad old song. Legacy time for you, liberal.
Right. Goodbye.
Go back to the bong. That's where your future is,
goodbye.
Mr. Pothead.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you. Deal with it.
All right, I'll try.
What is that? What's this whole Mr. Pothead thing?
I don't know. There seems to be a theme going. I haven't touched this stuff in years. Dig this, about 70 miles north of San Diego in Romoland School District will be shy one of its newly elected board members at the beginning of the term because he's in prison.
He's in the big house.
Yeah, this guy, Randy Logan Hale, won 831 votes in Tuesday's election while doing time. He's been in the big house since September on parole violation for a 1998 spousal abuse and drug possession rap.
Oh, yeah, that works with kids.
a rep from his campaign, well, actually a spokesperson for the California Institute for Men in Chino, said he'll be released and ready to run the schools February 15th. His wife confirmed that he was indeed in prison and then added, the bastard. The school superintendent is consulting lawyers to figure out what to do. I mean, with school board meetings being limited to visiting hours, it might be a little tough, I think.
Yeah. Hey, he'll be out. When is he supposed to be out? February?
Yeah, March? February, yeah. That's a pretty funny story. And that other kid, that Michael Sessions, who ran as a writing candidate for mayor in his hometown of Hillsdale, Michigan, population 9,000, he won, and he's 18 years old. He's going to be running the city out of his bedroom. I wonder if that's at his parents' house. I haven't figured it out yet, but he's limited to doing it after school. It looks like the phone banks are full with vets wanting to talk here on Veterans Day. We're going to do exactly that in a couple of minutes. It's 27 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Friday. It's Veterans Day. 2,057 Americans have been killed since the start of the Iraq War. About 15,000 have been injured in some way. Soldiers are plagued, some of them coming back from Iraq. One out of four veterans from Iraq returns to the United States with health problems that require medical and mental health care. 50,000 troops this year alone have returned with problems ranging from battle wounds to suicidal thoughts. The VA is straining to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. Between 96 and 2003, federal spending for the treatment of seriously mentally ill veterans decreased $630 million when adjusted for inflation. At the same time, the number of vets seeking those services has climbed 11%. As we said, on any given night in this country, there's 200,000 homeless vets out there in the streets of America. We have a president who has not attended a military funeral. I know that I was reading Bob Herbert's piece yesterday. A lot of vets feel disenfranchised, despairing. They've been overextended. Now, not only do they have to be concerned about the guerrilla war that they are fighting, but by the lack of morale and the plague of three or four tours of duty on their minds, on their families, on their dispositions. Let's take a couple calls, and Wayne Gilman is in here with us. He's going to tell a story about recruiting, because what's happening now is that these recruiters are so desperate because recruiting is so low that they are literally, you know, I can't even imagine the tactics they're using to coerce people who are already in compromised situations to join the military, and Wayne's going to tell us about that. But let's take one call first. Tony in Long Island, how are you?
Hey, Tony.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I'm pretty good. What's on your mind?
It's Veterans Day, and I love your show. It's very popular on the college campuses.
Okay. That's great.
All right. Here's my outrage for today.
Okay.
We should have a Veterans Day dog of the day.
All right.
Because the House Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman, Stephen Beyer, who was put in place by Tom DeLay, for the first time in 55 years, the veterans organizations will not be able to present testimony before the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee.
What?
They did that on Tuesday. They pulled that on Tuesday.
Not even the VFW?
Nope.
Whoa.
Nobody.
So that makes sense.
I was put in there because DeLay wanted to replace Chris Smith, for the Republican from New Jersey, because he was really consistent about the underfunding of veterans' courts.
Yeah, Smith fought very long and very hard and paid for it.
What?
He paid for it. I mean, he really ended up paying for his advocacy on behalf of veterans, because they removed him, didn't they?
Right, they did.
Delay
replaced him.
It's a great example, Tony, because that just shows that the neocon death cult does not want to have any dissent, even from guys who are just demanding to be treated with some respect while they fight or are ready to fight for the country.
Right. The hypocrisy of them about supporting the troops. And they do this during the week of Veterans Day.
Unbelievable. They always do stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Just shameless. Shameless. Thanks for your call, Tony.
Now listen, the Veterans for Peace and Veterans War groups will be marching in today's parade.
Oh, good. Yeah, we got a guy. What's that guy's name? George, who always comes down to the show?
Oh, from Staten Island. Yeah.
Yeah, nice guy. Hey, if you're listening, George, why don't you give us a call? Tony, thank you for calling. It's good talking to you.
And fight to keep this show on. It's a great show.
Oh, thank you so much. We will. All right, Tony. So Wayne, why don't you tell me that? Because I remember you and I, when we were hosting, when Riley was out running around somewhere.
Yeah, I was busy.
Yeah,
right?
He was busy.
Cold with Europe.
That you were outraged. I mean, you have this ongoing outrage against military recruiters.
Yeah, the thing is, I forgot we had done an interview with someone actually who was actually a recruiter at the time.
Yeah, Jimmy Massey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what really disturbs me is that this has been flying low on the radar screen for a number of years. They've been going into areas, the government, and it's duplicitous behavior. We're going to areas where in which a lot of minority children would congregate, like in malls. Mm-hmm. They go into black neighborhoods as far as schools are concerned. And most notably, I know from a personal perspective that one of my relatives, my younger sister to be exact, she doesn't like me to recount this, but I'm just going to bring it out because my anger still holds.
Yeah.
They go into places like discos, if you can still call them that, or clubs, and they play on the vulnerabilities of young people to try to get them to sign up. And then eventually, you know, they
discos?
You know, well, let me tell you, what happened with her is that somebody had the audacity after Gulf won to tell her that there will never be another war. And that you know the world is too sophisticated, and the thing is that if you tend to buy into that, if you're not up to speed with what's going on, not to say that the average person in those settings are functional illiterates, but if you don't keep abreast of what's happening, you think you hear all this talk about opportunities to improve. You'll never
college,
money for college,
learning a skill.
And the thing is, the unemployment rate in the black and Latino community is like off the charts, you know, especially during this administration.
And also the uninsured rate.
Exactly.
You know, there's so many different angles they could come at with these kids in the sense that, like, you probably don't even have health insurance, do
you?
Yeah, but you can't even buy yourself some nice clothes.
And they buy into that.
Yeah. Don't you want to learn how to fix an engine?
Uh-huh.
That whole thing.
And then when they find out that, you know, you sign up for this stuff and you become a reservist and you juxtapose what the government is giving you on a monthly or weekly basis compared to what you're making outside as an average worker working anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, you realize that you've been duped.
All right.
You know?
We got a guy, Bernie, in Inglewood, New Jersey, I think is talking about the same thing. Bernie, what's up this morning?
Hey, Bernie.
Hi. This is Ernie from Inglewood, and thank you. This is Juan Gonzalez, and I'm sorry, Juan Gonzalez in the Daily News.
Yeah.
He was just showing a disparity between the wealthy and the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of to go to the point that was just made. Three people from the Upper East Side joined the Army. And 45 people from East Harlem, 113 from Morris Annie and High Bridge, 116 from East New York, 73 from Elmhurst and Corona.
Yeah. Now, for people who don't know where those are generally working poor neighborhoods across New York City.
Exactly. And I grew up in New York City, so I know exactly what he's talking about. And it's just horrendous that the wealthy, apparently the... I guess, would you call them the elite, the senatorial class?
Sure, yeah.
They get the opportunity to just ignore the war because those who are poor and working or looking for jobs, like, what, a 60% unemployment rate for black men, and probably, you know, just on average minority men in New York.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Well, you know, this is Bob Herbert's column in the New York Times speaks to the same thing. The notion that people, you know, when they are desperate for work, when there's a high unemployment rate, then the military ends up recruiting folks in virtually any situation they can find,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the idea, what's hurting them now is the fact that so many people are saying, well, you know what, I'm not sure that I want to go over there and get blown up in Iraq. But the question of the disparity between, you know, people who are wealthy, who really don't have to sacrifice. That was the thing that Paul Rykoff was talking about. There's no one in America that's sacrificing except the soldiers.
Well, that's it. And even in the forces themselves, you have a class situation with these educated ones from West Point or who have already gone to college that don't have to take, they don't have to take the same tours of duty. They don't have to repeat their tours of duty. They're treated differently. And for these guys coming back, I mean, here you got the senatorial class so quick to send these guys into combat, but as soon as they come back, they're like, good luck, you know, right. Adapt or die. We'll see what happens. Good luck with that.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you mention that business of good luck, I think immediately of Donald Rumsfeld.
Right.
I mean, the deal is that they've been sending these kids out ill-equipped. You know,
yeah.
And that still exists, and they're still not doing anything about it, you know, with all their talk.
In Iraq, that's who's catching hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Iraqi civilians and the American troops.
Always, yeah. Jill, and here's an interesting angle, I think, in New Jersey. What's up, Jill?
Hey, Jill.
Hey, guys. How are you?
All right.
I used to be a store manager in a mall.
Yeah.
And so I always used to see the recruiters, and what I would do is call mall security to chase them away.
Oh, my God. You had to get the mall security guard in his uniform, chase these uniformed military guys
away.
He was able to pull rank on them, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, my theory was that we were paying rent, and they weren't.
Did they leave?
They'd always come back, but they knew that I didn't like them, so.
Oh, okay.
They went to the other part of the mall.
Yeah, and I think the parking lot's a fair game, because if they can't go inside the mall, I think they're allowed to recruit from
outside.
Well,
that was in Michael Moore's movie, I think, that they showed that. Jill, what kind of store was it?
It was actually like a hippie store.
Oh.
We sold tie-dyes and incense and all that stuff.
So. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And so, that's funny. All right, thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jill.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell. They must have liked Jill, because they certainly weren't thinking they were going to get any recruits there. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell them, look, man, we'll get you a college education, and we'll help you pass your drug test.
Yeah. We'll get you off that drugs. All right, so what do we got now? Let's take one more call before we go. Do we got one on there that you like there, John? I remember when I was 18 that I was so afraid of being put into a war that would not match with my particular ideology that I registered as a conscientious objector. Mm-hmm. You could do that. I don't know if it served any real purpose, but I registered as a conscientious objector, and I remember writing on my draft registration card, you had to register, remember?
Yeah,
during Reagan?
Yeah.
And I just wrote all over it, conscientious objector, like anyone's really looking at that.
Oh, man.
Well,
you know,
I remember the draft.
I remember the draft. I remember going to a physical in the summer of 1970.
Mm-hmm. Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn? Or,
No. This was in New Haven, Connecticut.
Okay.
And the thing was, my number was relatively low.
Right.
My number was like 88. So if I had gotten there, I'd have gone.
Right. Yeah.
But I got there, and the doctor, ironically enough, said, look, we have so many people here. If you all don't want to go into the service, we're not going to put you in the service. So if you have any illnesses or any ailments that you can think of, let us know now.
And people came up with all sorts of stuff. I mean, I remember one guy I went to high school with, because he was about to go. His number was very low also. He would urinate in front of the doctor at Fort Hamilton just to get out of it.
Yeah.
And they said, How many times did he pull that off?
No, he went twice, and he was let go.
Yeah.
Right, you know.
Or he'd just show up in a dress or what have you. But I don't know
why I brought that up, but it just came to memory.
Hey, anytime someone's peeing outside in front of people, it's a funny story on radio.
15 minutes before the top of the hour. I think I have news to do.
Oh, that's really good.
Oh, no, I'm serious.
Yeah.
But what we are talking about what we are talking about here is it is Veterans Day. We are trying to engage veterans a little bit and to make people and just to raise the awareness of it, because a lot of people don't treat Veterans Day with any respect at all anymore, in the sense that we are in a war. This country is involved in a war, and Veterans Day in terms of popularity and in terms of people honoring it to respect the people that are fighting or have fought has diminished, and we just wanted to give an opportunity for people to talk about their experiences. And also, I mean, I think the recruiting experiences is important too, because we think that, or I think the best way to support the troops is really to get them home as soon as possible, as safely as possible, and get the American people the truth about what's really happening in light of this war and why we were there. And I think people are starting to wake up to that. Thanks, Wayne. I hope
it's
46 past the hour. We'll be back in a second. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Despite the rumors, Mark Maron has a big, big future on Morning Sedition. So we've lined up some great new shows for him this fall. First, Mark Maron gets his own sitcom. Get set for On Your Mark.
Honey, I'm home.
Oh, Mark, bad news. This sitcom is canceled.
What? But we haven't even done a joke yet. No, wait. That wasn't a joke either.
After that, Mark becomes a game show host for Morning Sedition's version of Wheel of Fortune.
There's one L on the board.
I'd like to guess the phrase.
Go ahead.
The phrase is, Mark, your contract hasn't been renewed. Please pack up your desk.
That's absolutely right.
What?
For a double dose of quiz shows, Mark will be a contestant on Jeopardy!
The category is TV and movies for $200. Be sure to phrase your response in the form of a question. The answer is... you. Yes, Mark Maron.
Who is going to be fired?
And top off the evening as Mark Maron makes a dramatic guest appearance on ER.
Doctor, he's trying to tell us something.
Christo, fascist, zombie.
He's gone, and we never found out his name. Do you have any idea who he is, Doctor?
I've never seen that man before in my life.
That's coming up this fall on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
All right, it's 52 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
I just been grossed out by Jim Earl.
What did he do? You guys have the weirdest relationship.
He just grossed me out, man.
You're just going to leave it at that?
Well, he talked about a restaurant that's not far from here where one morning he saw a big rat on the oven in the bay window.
Hey, it's New York. Let him eat.
I know. They got to eat like everybody.
Have you been around here, for God's sake?
Yeah, I've seen him here, too.
I saw a mouse scramble out from the refrigerator over here. And it took my Danish here. We just got the City Bakery thing, and we're all giddy on sugar. It is Veterans Day. We are taking calls from veterans. We are going to land this show for the day and for the weekend. I hope you people have a good weekend out there. I hope you had a decent Friday. I'll tell you, there are a lot of things this week, I think, that happened that should make us feel okay about entering the weekend. There was some success in some of the elections. There's been a little bit of momentum. It gave me a little hope. There are indictments on the way, hopefully, of Karl Rove. The president is losing traction. I just hope, I talked to a guy yesterday on the phone here that was just, he had that heavy-heartedness that some of us get because of despair or hopelessness. I do think that we should, and I'm talking to myself here, when we do have a couple of tidbits of good news or of things that we should feel okay about, that we should run with that for a couple of days and
there
at least try to enjoy our weekend. Let's talk to Steve up there in Boston. How are you, Steve? What's on your mind today on Veterans Day?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey. What's up, Steve?
Nothing. I've been a listener of you guys for a long, long time. Served in the U.S. Army in 1990 and 91. Did not deploy to the Gulf, but was ready to go. I just want to thank you guys for everything that you're doing. I wish that there was something that we could do to keep you on the air, to get your contract renewed, whatever, because you're a funny couple of guys. Your whole show is real good, but it's also informative, and I think it's important that we have that voice on the air. So,
well, I appreciate
it. As a veteran and a citizen, I appreciate everything that you're doing, and I hope you guys stay around. I hope the people at Air America realize that you guys are valuable.
Oh, that's sweet.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate that. We appreciate that. That's nice.
Yeah.
That makes my heart swell with goodness. Oh, boy. What are you going to do this weekend, Riley?
Not a whole heck of a lot. As you had pointed out when you first walked in here this morning, this has been a long week for some reason.
It's draining,
dude. It's been
one
of those... you know what it was? Partly it was because of the election.
Yeah,
okay?
Not doing the show is not draining. I love doing the show. I love talking to people. But, you know, when there's tension in the air, when there's this and that, and you got a lot of big news coming out, that stuff doesn't even bother me. But I don't deal with stress that well. But it has been sort of a long week, and it's been just sort of a compulsive eating festival at my house.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's just stupid. Pints of ice cream. My wife's in town, and I'm running around going, I don't know what's going to happen. Give me some ice cream. What? What do you want? You know, it's...
Wait a minute. Now, has she cooked for you? Does Misha
my,
cook for
whoa, whoa.
You?
Now, my wife, I cook. I'm the cooker.
Oh, you're the cook.
She can do it. You know, she can definitely cook, but I like to do it, and I think it's important for our relationship, because if I'm busy, everything's good.
There you go.
Here we go. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Rioting in France has slowed down considerably. Authorities have gauged the riots by the number of cars burning, and recently they've noticed two things. First of all, the number of cars burning has declined over the last couple of days. Second of all, just incidentally, the hybrid cars burn longer. Republicans are blaming California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger for the failure of four ballot initiatives that voters rejected. Arnold hurt himself by taking his show business persona too seriously. It didn't help when he called his opponents girly men, and it only made it worse when he shot up an airport and claimed to be battling evil robots from the future. And a judge in Iowa ruled that a security guard who was fired for seeing ghosts was entitled to unemployment benefits. The guard said, quote, "The spirits wanted to cross over, but when they couldn't come up with ID, I said, not on my watch, and don't let me see you loitering between the physical plane and spirit world again. Do you hear me?" End quote. The guard supervisor was immediately suspicious when he showed up, and the guard asked him, "Are you the Keymaster?" Today's phrase, if you could just drop this into conversation. So Congress is asking big oil to justify their profits. That's like asking a dog why it licks itself. Wake up, sheeple. They're getting off and we're the fluffer. You dig that? How do you like that? How's that to go into your weekend?
There you go.
What do we have to look forward to?
We got Langhorne Slim to look forward to. We got the Monday morning job listing, and we've got morning remembrance. All coming up Monday. Good weekend, Maren.
You
Air
too.
America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.